talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-hosts today are Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime, and we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Right now, that time, 8:17. You're tuned to WGNS, and we appreciate you tuning in this morning and every morning. Temperature outside right now looks to be holding in the 80s. And in downtown Murfreesboro, right here at the radio station, temperature at 82 degrees right now. Looks like there is a chance of rain, pretty strong chance of rain, scattered thunderstorms throughout the day today. In fact, a 75% chance, already raining, in fact, in some areas of Rutherford County. The high will reach 92 degrees, and tonight, 25% chance of rain, temperature down to 68. And speaking of tonight, Main Street Murfreesboro has decided to go ahead and cancel the concert, the Friday Night Live concert that is or was scheduled to be held tonight on the downtown square in front of the county courthouse. Tonight, the guest that was going to be playing, the O'Donnells, a country group, that's not going to take place. Again, due to that inclement weather that is incoming, if you would. Again, the downtown Murfreesboro Friday Night Live concert, that's been canceled for this evening due to that weather that is making its way into the Rutherford County area. Time right now, 8:19, and we are broadcasting out of the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios. Middle Tennessee Electric has been serving to make life better right here in Rutherford County since 1936. More news from the local court system with the District Attorney and the District Attorney's Show with host J. Paul Newman. That comes your way right after this short break.
When is the right time to move to Adams Place?
I have enjoyed Adams Place much better than living in my house. After my wife passed away, what you're doing is you're getting people that you can interact with and have fun. Consider coming to Adams Place.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Adams Place, across from Walmart.
A search for truth. I know you're
out there. We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman.
I am your host for today's broadcast. During today's broadcast on our Call to Conviction segment, we will review a trial from the past. The trial involves the murder of Tina Stewart, which occurred in March of 2011. Tina Stewart was a star basketball player for Middle Tennessee State University. Her murder and the trial that followed attracted national attention. It was broadcast live in its entirety on local television and was also made available worldwide on the internet. No trial was ever followed more closely by more people in Rutherford County than this one. To discuss this case, we are honored to have two very special guests. From the Murfreesboro Police Department, we will have Sergeant Mike Taylor. Sergeant Taylor was the lead investigator on a team of law enforcement officers who successfully investigated and solved the murder of Tina Stewart. Sergeant Taylor will tell us about the investigation and provide background information regarding the case. And we are very pleased to have one of the experts who testified in the trial itself. Jerry Finley will offer expert insight regarding the blood evidence found at the crime scene. Jerry Finley's expert testimony provided valuable evidence which helped to convict Tina Stewart's murderer.
From call to conviction. Time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
In the fall of 2010, Tina Stewart was a student at MTSU. She was a member of the Lady Raiders basketball team and the apartment mate of Shanterica Madden. However, the two were not always the best of friends. In the late afternoon of March 2, 2011, Shanterica Madden was on the MTSU campus with a female friend. The two young women decide to walk to the Raiders Crossing Apartments, where Shanterica Madden and Tina Stewart shared an apartment. Shanterica Madden and her friend were going to the apartment to smoke marijuana. When Madden and her friend arrived, they thought that Tina Stewart was not there. But Tina Stewart was there. She was in her bedroom with the door closed. Madden and her friend smoked the marijuana in Madden's room. And from her bedroom, Tina Stewart smelled the marijuana. Being on the MTSU Lady Raider basketball team, Tina Stewart knew that being around marijuana could jeopardize her scholarship. At about 5:35 p.m., Tina Stewart calls the apartment management to complain. Management then calls their courtesy officer, who is an off-duty police officer. The officer arrives and asks Shanterica Madden if he could search her room. During the search, the officer locates a small marijuana roach in the ashtray. He tells Miss Madden to flush it down the toilet. No charges are placed and no arrest is made. The officer then speaks with Miss Madden outside, and then he leaves. At approximately 6:45 p.m., the Murfreesboro police receive an anonymous call. The caller tells police that they need to go to the Madden and Stewart apartment. The police arrive shortly before 7 p.m. As they pull up to the apartment building, they observe a male chasing a female on the apartment grounds. They discover the male is Tina Stewart's fiancé, Casey Anuna. The female is Shanterica Madden. Later, the police go inside of the apartment, and there they find Tina Stewart lying on the bedroom floor, stabbed to death. Tina Stewart was 21 years old at the time of her death. She suffered four distinct injuries that night. Her least serious injury was a laceration to her left arm. She also had a stab wound to her back and another stab wound on her neck. The most serious injury was a stab wound to her chest. That wound actually cut her aorta, which is the main artery leading to the heart. The wound also pierced Tina Stewart's lung. This injury caused Tina Stewart to bleed to death. That night, Shanterica Madden was interviewed by Detective Mike Taylor of the Murfreesboro Police Department. At first, she denied even being present when Tina Stewart was killed. She tried to cast suspicion on a man with dreadlocks, a man that she said was mad at Tina Stewart and had been in the parking lot earlier that night. Later, she changes her story. She finally admits that she had stabbed Tina Stewart, but claimed it was in self-defense. Following the interview, Shanterica Madden was charged with the first-degree murder of Tina Stewart. The trial of State of Tennessee versus Shanterica Madden began on May the 9th, 2012. The trial was presided over by the Honorable Judge Don R. Ash. Shanterica Madden was represented by Joe Brandon Jr. and Lori Young of Murfreesboro. The prosecution team consisted of District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr., and Assistant District Attorneys J. Paul Newman and Sheila Fries. Because of all the pretrial publicity, the jury had been selected from Chattanooga and brought to Murfreesboro to hear the case. The trial lasted 5 long days. The jury heard from 47 witnesses, and over 200 exhibits were introduced during the trial. The defense argued that Shanterica Madden was not guilty. They insisted that she acted in self-defense, and they asked the jury to set her free. The state argued that Shantarica Madden was guilty of first-degree murder, that the murder was an intentional and premeditated murder. They asked the jury to convict Shantarica Madden and send her to prison. After hearing the attorney's arguments, the jurors began their deliberations. On May the 14th, 2012, after little more than an hour of discussion, the jury returned to the courtroom with their verdict. The jury found Shantarica Madden guilty of murder in the second degree and guilty of tampering with evidence. On July 16th, 2012, Judge Don Ash sentenced Shantarica Madden. Judge Ash sentenced Shantarica Madden to the maximum sentence for second-degree murder, which was 25 years at 100% to serve. On the tampering with evidence charge, Judge Ash imposed an additional 4-year sentence. That 4-year sentence was ordered to be served after completing the 25-year sentence. The effective sentence was a total of 29 years. Under this sentence, Shantarica Madden should not be eligible for parole until the year 2038. With us today in the WGNS studio, Jerry Finley and Sergeant Mike Taylor. Mike Taylor was the lead investigator in the case. Jerry Finley was the expert witness whose testimony helped cast serious doubt on Shantarica Madden's version of how Tina Stewart was killed. It was Jerry Finley's testimony that helped persuade the jury that Shantarica Madden was not acting in self-defense when she stabbed Tina Stewart and left her alone to die. Jerry Finley is an expert in crime scene reconstruction and blood pattern analysis. Mr. Finley, we want to welcome you to Murfreesboro, and we want to welcome you to the broadcast.
Thank you for having me here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, and especially about your prior law enforcement training and experience.
I've been involved in forensic investigations for close to 41 years now. Started out with the Chatham County Police Department in Savannah, Georgia, and was there as a forensic investigator. When I retired from there, I went to work for the state of Georgia in the Department of Public Safety as the supervisor of forensic science and death investigation training for the state. I began consulting outside of that in 1980 and have been consulting as well as teaching ever since.
In your current capacity, I know that you wear multiple hats. You offer your services as an expert witness, and you're in great demand to speak at law enforcement training seminars. How many trials have you testified in as an expert witness?
154.
And what different states have you testified, or how widespread has your testimony been?
Well, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, as well as Texas and Colorado.
I first met you several years ago when you taught a week-long one-man blood pattern analysis seminar at the Murfreesboro Police Department. Tell us how it was that we were fortunate enough to get you to come to Murfreesboro.
Well, I teach for the Institute of Police Technology and Management at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville, and one of the officers from Murfreesboro attended one of the courses down there and asked me if I would be willing to come to Murfreesboro and teach the same course up here, which I agreed to, and so came to Murfreesboro and taught the first course. That's when I met you.
To start with, tell us what a crime scene reconstructionist does.
A crime scene reconstructionist analyzes the evidence recovered from a crime scene, analyzes the crime scene, the autopsy, and takes all of that and puts it together into the sequence of events that took place within a crime scene.
What type of information and assistance can an expert in blood pattern analysis provide to the law enforcement officers and help them investigate the case?
Well, in a lot of cases, when you have a statement, there's some parts of it that you may or may not believe or is not consistent with the evidence. So therefore, the blood pattern analyst and the reconstructionist can put together the types of things that are in the statement that are true and the types of things in the statement that are not true based on the physical evidence and the crime scene itself.
Can you explain how a cold case investigation is different than a fresh homicide investigation?
Well, in a cold case, you're going to have certain limitations depending on how well, as I mentioned, how well the scene is documented, the evidence is collected and preserved. In a lot of cold cases, the evidence gets lost, misplaced, it's not analyzed properly. Now, with a fresh case and the things that we can do today, if the evidence is preserved properly in a cold case, then you can have additional tests run, such as DNA. And with all the national databases that we have, like the APHIS or fingerprint database, the DNA database, and NIBIN, which is a firearms database, all of those things really help as far as today's cases go. But if the evidence is not really preserved well from the older cold cases, it makes it difficult. And another thing is that a lot of times the cold cases are picked up by a detective that was not at the original scene, so they don't have that personal observation in looking at the scene and being able to tell what transpired there. So cold cases are difficult, and you do have limitations. However, with a fresh case or a current homicide case, then you have the advantage of all of these things at hand if it's utilized.
Jerry, I want to ask you about the Shantarica Madden trial, and I'd like to talk to you about what evidence the district attorney's office asked you to examine.
The reconstructionist needs is all the information that we can get in terms of the physical evidence, but I was asked to examine the crime scene photographs, the autopsy report, the crime scene investigation, the crime lab reports, to see if it would be consistent with the statement given by Ms. Madden.
How much time do you really have to spend examining and closely looking at all this evidence before you can come to an opinion?
It takes a while, depending upon the case. In this particular case, probably I spent about 40 hours just analyzing it, because you have to dissect it, look at each piece of evidence recovered, look at each photograph minutely, inch at a time, and you have to put all this together. You correlate the injuries with the blood that's at the scene, and then you compare all of that with the statements at line by line to determine at what point, you know, the person is telling the truth or what point that they're lying.
I know that a small spot of blood can actually tell you a story about what went on. Tell us some of the things you can determine from looking at a blood spot or a blood pattern.
Well, blood pattern analysis is a study of the size, shape, distribution, and location of the various types of stains. Due to research and in the publications and so on, we know how these stains are created. So by knowing how the stains are created, we can then determine, okay, was this person standing, sitting, were they lying, was the perpetrator close to the victim, not close to the victim, and so on. So by looking at the stains and determining the angle, direction, and location, can tell us an awful lot about what transpired at that crime scene.
In Shantarica Madden's statement, she said that she acted in self-defense and that she first stabbed Tina Stewart at the front of the bed, which was located close to the doorway entrance. Concerning that part of her statement, what did your findings show when you examined the physical evidence?
Well, that part of the statement is wrong, and is not consistent with the physical evidence that's at the scene. The actual stabbing through the chest, and there was a struggle, the stabbing through the chest was actually done over by the desk on the wall next to the trash can, which is on the opposite side of the room from the door in the foot of the bed.
Can you just walk us through what your examination of the crime scene indicated was the sequence of events as to what happened?
Well, there was an altercation, and there was a struggle, and this is based on the additional injuries to Ms. Stewart, and that she was backed up into the corner in an upright position, not on the floor, as stated by Ms. Madden. She was backed up into that corner by the desk, and where she received the fatal stab wound and possibly some of the other injuries, which was totally across the room from what Ms. Madden said in her statement.
And I understand in Ms. Madden's statement, she originally said that she was holding the knife up in front of her and that Ms. Stewart walked into it, and there was only one stab wound. Can you tell us what you looked at to determine whether or not that particular statement of one stab wound was true?
Well, look at the autopsy report and the autopsy photographs, which showed additional injuries, and there was on the back of her left shoulder, there was another superficial wound there, a stab wound. Also, the cast-off from the knife itself was located over by the desk and the trash. So there was a struggle. However, it was not a struggle where Ms. Madden was on the floor and Ms. Stewart was above her and so on, because when she was stabbed, the cast-off stains and all on the other side of the room.
Jerry, it's my belief that because of your findings, the jury had substantial reasons to believe that Shantarica Madden's version of how Tina Stewart met her death was not true.
the Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios, take control of your account management and energy consumption with the MyMTE app. Download from the App Store and manage your account, improve your energy habits, and more. MTE, serving to make life better since 1936.
Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurants. One of the new menu items that we have added is our Salmon Imperial. Our Salmon Imperial is a fresh cut piece of salmon with shrimp and a crab meat blend, and then we've put our Alfredo sauce on top of it. It's great for a low carb diet that you can get with spinach, but also it just has an amazing flavor with a mixture of all those flavors between the shrimp, Alfredo, and then our salmon. Please have your family join our family for lunch or dinner 7 days a week at Demas's.
If you're planning an upcoming trip and want to include your pet, we have all the travel supplies you'll need at Animal City. This is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. Animal City is Murfreesboro's hometown family-owned pet store. We've had the honor and pleasure of serving the community for 33 years. If you want to see some photos of our adorable pets, feel free to check out our Facebook page, Animal City of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro.
Capstar is now a division of Old National Bank. You'll notice some changes as we complete the transition to Old National Bank. The Murphy Spread team that you know and trust at Capstar are always ready to serve you. We'll temporarily use Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, until the transition's complete. As always, we're ready to serve you at Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, member FDIC.
Get it later from the paper or get it now from the radio. WGNSradio.com.
We now welcome to the WGNS microphone Sergeant Mike Taylor of the Murfreesboro Police Department. Sergeant Taylor was the lead investigator in the Tina Stewart case. It was through his efforts and the efforts of a team of law enforcement officers that Shanterica Madden was arrested, prosecuted, and convicted. Sergeant Taylor, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Jay Paul. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sergeant Taylor, I know there were many officers who worked on this case. And can you take a minute and tell us some of the names of the many officers who helped you bring this case to justice?
Yeah, this really was a collaboration of officers. Really, the whole department worked on it at various times. But there's a few people that I would like to mention. First, Detective English, who was a patrol officer at the time, responded to the scene. She was one of the first officers on the scene and immediately attempted to render first aid. Also, the crime scene unit that worked on this case, there was lots of evidence that was collected that really helped in the prosecution. And that team was led up by Sergeant Henderson and Ed Gorham, Sergeant Mongold, and Detective Von Pock D. Also, Sergeant Keaton helped with the search of that scene, helped locate some evidence that helped in that conviction.
Sergeant Taylor, this case was solved what I call rather quickly. I think you made the arrest that same night. Was there a specific time in the investigation that you knew who killed Tina Stewart?
Initially, when I got there was a lot of people on the scene, a lot of witnesses, and the first thing I wanted to do was try to sort through and figure out the relationships of those individuals, who was going to be witnesses, who was going to be potential suspects. And it really wasn't until I started to put together those relationships and see how all the pieces of the puzzle fit that I could start understanding what had happened. And then once I started interviewing Shanterica Madden, I was also getting some information from the crime scene. It was pretty obvious to me initially in that interview that she was being deceptive and was not telling the truth about what happened. So it was pretty early on, I think, when I started to develop her as a suspect.
When the police arrive at the apartment complex, they see Tina Stewart's fiance, Casey Anuna, and he is chasing after Shanterica Madden. Can you explain to the audience why Mr. Anuna was pursuing Shanterica Madden at that time?
Well, Casey and Tina, they had a pretty specific schedule that they kept. As being athletes and being pretty busy, they kept pretty tight to that schedule. And earlier in the evening, Casey had sent a text message and had attempted to get in touch with Tina and was unsuccessful. And one of the key elements that we'll get back to is that Casey actually received a return text message from Tina's phone saying that she was about to get into the shower. Casey was starting to get concerned because he had talked to Tina, so he actually went to the apartment And he made mention that when he was pulling up, he could see through Tina's bedroom that her television in the bedroom was on. When he goes into the apartment, Shantarica stops him at the door and tells him that Tina is not there. He's concerned enough that he doesn't believe her story, goes past her, goes to the bedroom where he finds Tina lying on the floor. He immediately goes back to Shantarica because he knows that she was not telling the truth. And that's when she fled from the apartment. He gave pursuit after her. The whole time he was chasing her, he was yelling for someone to call the police.
This case was very well investigated, and as I've said, we had over 200 exhibits of evidence that were introduced. Tell us about some of the evidence that pointed the finger of guilt at Shantarica Madden.
There was a lot of evidence collected, but there were several pieces of evidence that, in my mind, were very key to the case. Not only were they key to the case, but they helped show Shantarica's mindset of what she was thinking and where her priorities were. And we'll go through a few of those pieces of evidence. I think, to me, one of the key pieces of evidence was Tina's cell phone, which should have been found on her or in her bedroom and was actually found outside of the bedroom on the couch in the living room. And we had a witness that said they had seen Shantarica with Tina's phone. Going on from there, the murder weapon, which was a broken kitchen knife, was actually found outside of the apartment, wrapped up in a Tinkerbell blanket that belonged to Tina. And those items were in a garbage bag located in a dumpster on the property, along with two additional matching knives. And these were steak knives that would be located in the kitchen. And our crime scene people did a fantastic job at going back, looking at the apartment, and were able to find in the dishwasher some steak knives that match those found in the dumpster. Additionally, like I said, the blanket that we know belonged to Tina Stewart was found in the dumpster. There was a towel located outside in the parking lot that had blood on it and had Tina's DNA located on it. These pieces, when you start putting them together, really show that the efforts that Shantarica was going to try to cover up what she had done. And then aside from the physical evidence that we found at the scene, there were the statements that she made herself regarding what had happened. Initially, she said that there was an altercation between the two of them, a verbal altercation, and that she was leaving the apartment to cool down. She also said that Tina was leaving the apartment. And she said that since she didn't have her keys with her, she didn't bother to lock the door. And that as she was leaving the apartment, she noticed a black male she described with dreadlocks that was acting suspicious in the parking lot. She mentioned that she had seen him before and that he had come to the apartment and was asking for Tina. But it was obvious in her statement, and combining that with the evidence that we found at the scene, that that just didn't happen. There was no way that that could have happened. And again, going back to some of the evidence that we found and putting that together with a timeline, it was pretty easy to see by looking at that timeline how long had transpired, how much time she took to try and cover this up and try to dispose of this evidence.
Concerning her statement, she told the first statement concerning the man with dreadlocks, and then she told you a statement where she did admit that she did, in fact, have a knife in her possession and was the person who stabbed Tina Stewart. Tell us what version of events she gave on that.
Yes, she did. After I confronted her with the story that she had initially told was just not going to be believed and the problems with that story, she did admit to stabbing Tina. She said that she went to Tina's room to confront her about the police being called earlier in the evening. She said that Tina's door was locked and that she had to knock on the door to get Tina to open the door. She said that when she went into the room, they had a verbal altercation. She admitted that she said she was, when she was leaving the room, that she bumped into or may have shoved Tina, which led to the physical altercation. She said that during this physical altercation that Tina was on top of her and that had knocked her to the ground, and that she reached to the top of the bed where she found the knife, and that she didn't know how Tina had gotten stabbed with the knife. Later, she kind of changed that story and said that when the stabbing took place, she was actually standing and that she had the knife held up in front of her, pointed towards Tina, but at Shantarica's chest level, and that Tina came towards her and that the knife stabbed Tina under Tina's own force at coming towards her. Going back and kind of what Jerry had alluded to earlier, when you go back and you start looking at the information available and you look at the autopsy report and the autopsy findings, the autopsy showed that that fatal wound to the chest was at a downward trajectory, and given the height difference between Tina and Shantarica, and the version that Shantarica described, it's just impossible for that fatal wound to have been inflicted in that way. It would have been more likely that that wound would have occurred from an overhand stabbing type motion.
Some of the most devastating evidence against Shantarica Madden came from her own statement and from her testimony in court. Can you summarize what Shantarica Madden said she did after she stabbed Tina Stewart?
Yes, she said that after the stabbing took place, that Tina fell to the ground and that she was lying there. She could tell that she was still breathing, lying on the floor of her bedroom in the apartment. And Shantarica told us that she turned the lights out in the bedroom, shut the door, and walked out of the bedroom. She said she had wet clothes in the washer, so she took those clothes out of the washer and she put them in the dryer so that they could dry. She made several phone calls. I believe one of the phone calls was to her mother. She then made a phone call, or I believe it actually may have been a text message, to one of her friends, asking the friend to come pick her up as soon as possible. Additionally, she went on to tell us about Casey coming to the apartment, and she admitted to telling him that Tina was not in the room. She said that she didn't want him to find her that way. She also had told us that during the time frame where she was making these phone calls and waiting for her clothes to dry, that she went back and peeked into the bedroom and that Tina was still lying on the floor.
At any time did she say that she thought about calling for help, for someone to assist Tina Stewart?
Everything that she told us that she did after the stabbing took place was to benefit her. Nothing that she did was to aid Tina in any way. She made several phone calls, as I mentioned before, sent several text messages, none of which were to the police, none of which were to ambulance service to try to get any type of help to the apartment. Rather, all of her phone calls, all of her efforts were to essentially save herself and to try to get out of the apartment and get away from the scene.
I know that you worked very closely with the family of Tina Stewart. I know you interacted with her mother, her father, and her sister, who all testified at trial. Can you tell us how difficult it is when you've got to sit down with the family and describe what happened to their loved one?
Yeah, it's probably the most difficult thing in this line of work that you can do. What you have to keep in mind is there's really nothing you're going to be able to say. There's nothing you can tell them that's going to change the events that's happened. The only thing you can do is be truthful with them, let them know that you're going to work, put 100% into it, and that you're going to put all your efforts on to making sure that justice is done and that they can have some closure. And really, by just sitting down and giving them the truth of what happened, that's about all you can do.
And I know that the MTSU community, President McPhee, the MTSU Athletic Department, and especially Coach Rick Insel and Tina Stewart's teammates played a vital role in assisting in this investigation. How much was their cooperation appreciated by you as the lead investigator?
Well, this case was unique in that we had so much help on the case. By the media attention, things like that, the publicity the case received, unlike a lot of cases where we don't get as much help from the community sometimes, this case, there was just an outpouring of help from the MTSU community. I think one of the things is this case was unique where it involved an MTSU student charged with killing another MTSU student. The MTSU community really helped the witnesses. They helped the family understand that they weren't alone, that everybody was kind of going through the same grieving process. There was a lot of support from the basketball team for the family. And I think it really helped the family, helped to comfort the family to see just how many lives that their daughter touched.
News Radio WGNS 100.5, 101.9, 1450. Online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.
Hi, this is Ryan with Tire World Laverne. Here to serve all your automotive needs in Rutherford County, we welcome all your fleet and commercial accounts along with all your regular routine maintenance. Tire World, a hometown family business you can trust.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones. And today, I will be your tour guide through the episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have been convicted, and of course, they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On February the 12th of 2022, the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a parking lot on Middle Tennessee Boulevard in response to a shooting. Upon arrival, officers discovered at least five individuals had been struck by gunfire. Two individuals had been shot multiple times, including Mr. Brandon Anderson, who later died from his injuries. Upon the conclusion of his investigation, Detective Jacob Fountain charged Mr. Jamar Marks with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, three counts of aggravated assault, employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon. The next scheduled court appearance is set for July 25th of this year. Mr. Marks is represented by counsel Mr. Michael Rexroth, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On August the 30th of 2022, officers with the Smyrna Police Department responded to a shooting at a gas station on Sam Ridley Parkway. Mr. Nicholas Patterson had been shot during the course of an attempted robbery and later died as a result of his injuries. Surveillance video showed an armed subject enter the store, point a firearm at Mr. Patterson, fire at least one shot into the ceiling of the store, and then shoot Mr. Patterson before running out of the store. Detective Steve Hanna with the Smyrna Police Department has been assigned as lead investigator. As a result of the two other robberies, one in Brentwood and one in Nashville, Mr. Key Anthony Williams was identified as a suspect. Upon execution of a search warrant, Mr. Williams was taken into custody and found to be in possession of a firearm. Mr. Williams was interviewed by law enforcement, and at the conclusion of the interview, Mr. Williams was charged with first-degree murder, attempted aggravated robbery, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. A preliminary hearing was held in the Smyrna General Sessions Court, and the matter was bound over to a Rutherford County grand jury. The next scheduled court date will be August 21st of this year. Mr. Williams is represented by Assistant Public Defender Ben Wetzel, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On the 6th of April, 2022, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to an apartment complex on Old Las Casas Road. The body of Mr. Ryan Wolcott was found beaten and stabbed to death on the floor of his apartment. Detective Julie Cox has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. Alistair Jennings, one of Mr. Wolcott's roommates, has been developed as a suspect. Detective Cox's investigation has resulted in physical evidence and witness statements that connect Mr. Jennings to the murder of Mr. Wolcott. Mr. Jennings was charged with first-degree murder. On August the 12th of 2022, a preliminary hearing was held in the General Sessions Courts of Rutherford County. Upon proof presented by the state, the court bound the matter over for presentation to a grand jury. The defendant's next scheduled court appearance is for August 15th of this year. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On February the 13th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call in reference to a stabbing at a residence on Ransom Drive. Upon entry, officers discovered the body of Mr. Philip Maddox on a bedroom floor. Mr. Maddox had been stabbed multiple times. Witnesses on scene advised that Mr. Maddox's roommate, Malik Smith, admitted to stabbing Mr. Maddox. Officers located Mr. Smith, and Mr. Smith confirmed the witnesses' claim that he had stabbed Mr. Maddox. Detective David Miller of the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. After a search of the residence, collection of evidence, and interviewing of all witnesses, Mr. Smith was charged with first-degree murder. On May 31st of last year, a preliminary hearing was held, and the court found probable cause to bind the matter over to a grand jury. Mr. Smith is represented by counsel, Ms. Whitney Rocky. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland.
On January 14th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to St. Thomas Hospital on a reported domestic assault. The victim, Miss Camelita Ojeda, has been attacked by her ex-boyfriend, Ambrose Payne. Mr. Payne lured Miss Ojeda outside of her apartment, claiming to be there to pay her some money he owed her. When Mr. Payne did not have the money, Miss Ojeda ended the conversation and attempted to go back into her apartment. Mr. Payne put his vehicle in drive and struck Miss Ojeda with the front bumper and ran into her, pinning her between a chain-link fence and the front of his vehicle. Mr. Payne then backed up and drove off at a high rate of speed. Officers located Mr. Payne's vehicle, finding damage and markings on the front that were consistent with Miss Ojeda's statement. Likewise, Miss Ojeda had physical injuries to her body consistent with being struck and pinned down by a vehicle. Mr. Payne was later located and charged with aggravated assault. On July the 2nd of 2023, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a domestic assault in progress. Once again, and while released on bail, Mr. Payne attacked and assaulted Miss Ojeda. Mr. Payne had choked Miss Ojeda to the point of leaving injuries on her neck. Mr. Payne released Miss Ojeda, and she began to run away. Mr. Payne chased her and threw her to the ground and began to punch and kick the victim. A witness heard screaming and went outside and saw Mr. Payne's attack on Miss Ojeda. Mr. Payne was once again arrested and charged with aggravated assault and kidnapping. On April 30th of this year, Mr. Payne appeared before the Chancery Court of Rutherford County and entered a plea of guilty to 3 counts of aggravated assault against Miss Ojeda and received an effective 8-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Payne was represented by counsel, Miss Billy Zimmerman, with the Public Defender's Office, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Sarah Davis. On September 27th of 2020, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call regarding gunshots on Gunnarsson Avenue. Upon arrival, officers located Mr. Javarius Malone with a single gunshot wound to his chest. Law enforcement officers and EMTs worked to save Mr. Malone, but he did not survive his injuries. Detective Cody Thomas with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as the lead investigator. Upon interviewing witnesses, obtaining apartment complex security video footage, and using cell phone and GPS data, Gregory Lyons and Corey Lillard were identified as suspects. At the conclusion of Detective Thomas's investigation, Mr. Lyons and Mr. Lillard were charged with first-degree murder, employing a weapon during the commission of a dangerous felony, and attempting to sell a Schedule I drug. Mr. Malone was found to have owed Mr. Lyons $50 from an August transaction. On August the 29th of 2020, Mr. Lyons threatened Mr. Malone for not paying him by sending Mr. Malone an emoji of a coffin with a threatening text message. On September the 27th, Mr. Lyons learned that Mr. Malone was attempting to buy narcotics from Mr. Lillard. Mr. Lyons had gone to Mr. Lillard's house 20 minutes before Mr. Malone, and Mr. Lillard started texting regarding the sale. Mr. Lyons went with Mr. Lillard to meet with Mr. Malone and Mr. Lyons, and Mr. Lillard was armed with a .357 semi-automatic pistol. Witnesses heard yelling and then a single gunshot. Mr. Lyons and Mr. Lillard were recorded on various security camera videos riding bicycles to the location and, after the murder, recorded running away on foot. Mr. Lyons' DNA was found on the bicycle located just a few feet from Mr. Malone's body. It was later discovered that just 2 days prior to the murder, Mr. Lyons had arranged to acquire a .357 caliber pistol. On May 23rd of this year, a jury of Mr. Lyons' peers found him guilty of all charges. Mr. Lyons was sentenced by Judge Jimmy Turner to a life sentence for first-degree murder. The court set an additional sentencing hearing for September 4th of this year for the remaining convictions. Mr. Lillard has previously entered pleas of guilty to facilitation to first-degree murder in an attempt to sell a Schedule I drug. Mr. Lillard received a 20-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Lillard was represented by counsel Mr. Thomas Maynard. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. This will conclude today's look inside the courts.
As we end our program today, we thank our producer, Scott Walker.
We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my two co-hosts, Jennings Jones and Trevor Lynch, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.